recording now. Well, Lucy, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm a Kiwi, about 45 years old, give or take. I'm currently over here in Australia at the moment in Newcastle, which is about 2 hours north of Sydney.
Okay.
That's, yeah, I suppose probably about 150,000 maybe 300 in the wider area. It's sort of a university town. It's on the coast. It's really lovely, actually. I'm loving it here. So.
Oh, wonderful.
Might be a few years before I'm back in New Zealand, maybe.
Okay. I'm all interested in Australia now because I'm planning this trip in March. I've never been to Australia, and so I'm going to take a week of vacation before I go down to Melbourne. And I'm really excited. I've never been to Australia. I love to travel, but so I'm really excited about it. It sounds like a beautiful country.
It's lovely. Everything in the country is designed to basically kill or maim you in the most creative way possible.
That's what my wife is concerned about.
Snakes, spiders, and that's not even mentioned the locals. So it's a fair bit. It's a big change from New Zealand, where we've got, I think, one poisonous spider that is quite shy and secretive, but here everything will like actively pursue you given half the chance. So yeah. we just came back from Melbourne, actually. We were down there for the weekend before we went to the tennis, which is something my partner had wanted to do for a long time. It's a lovely city. I think you'll really enjoy it there.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Where else are you going to?
Well, I'll see the reef a little bit in the week before with the family, and then fly back down to Melbourne, and I'll be speaking at a conference and I'll be preaching. So they've got a pretty full slate for me there, which I'm excited about. So I'm.
What's the conference?
It's a conference on Jordan Peterson.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Didn't even know that was happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what the, a number of months ago, they contacted me and said that they'd like me to go and do a conference for them. And I thought, really? They're like, oh yeah, very much. So we're doing it. So it's wonderful.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. Who's organizing it? Is it like a church thing? Or
a church down there. Now someone just knocked at my door. Hold on. This happens sometimes, but just be patient. I'll be right back.
Hi. There you go. I totally meant to give it to you last week.
The babies will do that.
Oh my god, I thought pregnancy brain was bad. New mom brain is so much worse.
Well, they don't ask for permission, they just tell you what they need.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they don't really tell you what they need, they just cry.
Right, you gotta figure it
That's
out.
That's right, I need something, you figure it out.
Sorry about that. That's going to become a meme in my videos when I have to get up and answer the door.
That's all good. No problem. Does your travels take you past Sydney at all?
I think we're just touching down in Sydney and then flying right back out again. So I'm not going to spend any time in Sydney.
Oh, that's a shame. It's almost as nice as Melbourne.
Well, I've you know, who knows? I got the tickets weren't crazy expensive. They weren't as expensive as I thought. So who knows? Maybe I'll come back again someday. Who knows?
Yeah, but. Sure. And what will you talk about at the conference exactly? Like the whole conference in itself or your involvement in it or what you've been doing?
Just about everything. I'll probably talk about why I think Jordan Peterson is important to this moment in Christianity. In the ways that it's a kind of a shocking thing that so many people have been moved by him to once again be interested in Christianity, and the groups that have been moved to be interested in him were groups that were quite resistant to the usual ways that Christians try to attract new people. So that's what drew me to this, and I've really spent the last year and a half trying to learn why is this happening? What are the historical roots of it? What can the church learn from this? What, you know, how can the church continue to do its mission to to do its mission in the world now, learning what we are from Jordan Peterson. So I think that'll mostly be what I talk about.
Well, it's certainly been fantastic having your videos. I think I discovered them fairly early on. I was probably searching for Jordan Peterson videos on YouTube, and I came upon one of your one of yours, and obviously had that in the title, and I've been following ever since. And the job I do involves quite a bit of driving, so it's been great having one of them on podcast, and also with university studies, having it in the background. It's been a great ride, actually. I've really enjoyed the interviews you've had with other people, and also how you've sort of integrated it into the Christian story, especially with C.S. Lewis. Haven't quite managed to get into The Abolition of Man. I would probably have to sit down with a notebook and pen to slowly work my way through it. But the other stuff, and having been a bit of a fan of Lewis, especially the Screwtape Letters and The Great Divorce, I've really enjoyed seeing that connection, because it's certainly something found I can relate to, definitely.
Well, thank you. No, it's been tremendously fun, and I've really enjoyed the conversations like we're having now, just because it's unexplored territory. There's always someone new out there who's got a new idea and a new angle or different life experiences, and then to integrate that into my learning has been just wonderful.
Cool. So I guess I've got a couple of questions, or I can go a little bit more into where I've come from and where I'm at, whatever you think would be.
It's up to you. It's your time. So lead us where you will.
we'll be riffing fairly freely, I think.
Okay.
Going where the spirit leads, I believe.
Okay.
The expression. So I'm here in Australia studying at the University of Newcastle, and I'm doing a degree in natural history illustration. Which is basically painting and drawing, but essentially artistic representations of the natural world, often with a very scientific focus, but it does let you go into things like animation, medical illustration, children's books. So there's kind of a split between the science and the more artistic, creative side, but it's all linked with like a natural history focus.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I think, the only place in the Southern Hemisphere that does a degree course in it. And there wouldn't be any in the world. It's a real sort of an oddity. So if you want to do it, you essentially have to come to Newcastle. So I moved over here about 3 years ago. I was in the Air Force back in New Zealand for probably close to 19 years, I guess, working as a photographer.
Wow.
It was a great job, best job in the world. But all good things have to come to an end. And this was something even better to go and do. And there's a real sense of calling in it as well. So even though it's certainly a lot of work, and I think the more I do, the more I feel I still have to learn, which kind of mirrors Christian, I guess, the spiritual walk, I suppose. So yep. It ties in quite nicely. So I think I mentioned in the emails or the things we exchanged, so in about 2010, I transitioned from male to female.
Mm-hmm.
My claim to fame is I'm the first person in the New Zealand Defence Force to do it. So that's the one that probably make a great bit. And I think about the only thing I'll be famous for. And that went very well. I was very well supported by the workplace, the friends and family and everything. And I suppose that was what got me interested in, it was like sort of the first thing that interested me in Jordan Peterson, in the sense that I must have heard a snippet on the news or something about, some professor in Toronto not using the, transgender pronouns or something. And I didn't really pay it much attention. Things had gone or have gone so well that it was like, you kind of sort of shrug your shoulders, and it's like, who cares? There's other things going on in life to focus on. But it must have kept cropping up in various news sources or online. And then, so I think I went and looked on the YouTube and saw the protests. And I was hooked within a couple of minutes after hearing him speak. I understood exactly where he was coming from. And I think to make to make it even more compelling, I thought the people that were protesting against him were doing it in very bad faith, in the sense that they weren't, I mean, even if they didn't agree with what he was saying, they weren't listening to what it was. And yeah, if I'd been there, I think I would have been compelled to cross lines, I guess, from, you know, my tribe and, you know, inverted commas, to supporting what he was saying. Even if I thought there were still some questions about, say, intersex people, where I think you can make a really good case in having met, you know, no one, known one fairly well when I was back in New Zealand, that, you know, there is some scope for developing like sort of a gender-neutral pronoun for people that just don't fit neatly into one box or the other. But I really felt that he, even if he didn't agree with what he was doing, his reasoning behind it, I guess, the potential for too much control over speech mandated by the government wasn't a good path to go down. And yeah, from that point on, I was, yeah, like most people, I guess, I came for the scandal and stayed for the content. Worked my way through all his lectures while I was doing my studies, which is great because you're sitting in the lab drawing and you've got the headphones on and just free education on top of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess followed the controversies. There is a sense, I guess, it is very much like the Truman Show. Even though I've benefited a lot, I think, in certain areas, maybe facing up to a few resentments, I guess, that I was nurturing. Mm. The sense of being trying to be a bit more organised, which is a constant struggle, but also to just getting a better handle on, yeah, what is meaningful and how best to pursue that as opposed to, say, what is expedient, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I suppose my first question would be, how do you think it'll all end?
This morning I was watching, so I've been doing more work on John Vervaeke's stuff lately. And so then I dug up a video that I had tried to watch a while ago of Peterson talking to Vervaeke, and this was from 2015. It's about the same time Peterson did the first transliminal interview. And what was sort of delightful about it is this was before the status rocket for Peterson, and he was kind of relaxed, and you know, he could say what he wanted to. He didn't have to be careful. And so as I watched that, I was pondering the ways in which he's this his own transition has changed him. I don't know how this will end. There are some end scenarios. And when I say end scenarios, I mean ways that he can step off kind of this crazy wave he's riding. One of those might be Dr. Oz and daytime television. You know, Jordan Peterson has his own daytime television show. Yeah, that, you know.
I think you saw my comment about the staged intervention. We'd be expecting you to leave.
You know, the difficult thing is that it's very difficult to ride a wave forever. And that he's been on this crazy ride for 2 years now, which is, you know, it's kind of a crazy ride. I started reading a biography of Napoleon, and you know, Napoleon had about a 10-year crazy ride. The difficult thing with Peterson is that he's in a sense so out there, away from institutions, kind of on his own. So it's really hard to know. Will something inside of him change so that he's just not as much fun anymore? Will people get tired of him? Will he not be able to refresh his content? And so he kind of becomes a one-trick pony? Or does he have further to go? A lot depends on what the next book is and how that goes and whether lightning can, in a sense, strike twice with a new biblical series. So I think in the next year, 2019 will be an important year to figure out whether 2020 will also be an interesting year for Jordan Peterson, or if he'll just kind of land. That's somewhere. Yeah. So when Ron Dart and I were talking, that's kind of where we agree that if he's going to have staying power, he's going to have to either do something else or really start to build an institution that gives what he's doing, you know, really, really staying power.
Yeah, I had mixed feelings about the announcement of the second book. One, I think, and you'd made a comment, I think, in one of the previous videos some time ago about, you know, oh no, not another 12 rules. Part of me, yeah, has that sense, well, there's probably a lot of good stuff that could be developed. And having listened to his Q&A where those rules were mentioned, I think there were certainly some, and I can't think of anything off the top of my head, where you could really probably mine quite deeply, draw on stuff from his lectures and bring out some kind of new content or package it. But I guess there is that risk of it becomes almost too much, where perhaps something that went in a different direction, maybe saying looking at the scientific issues, say in what you might call the grievance study courses, or like really maybe really interacting, say, with feminism in such a way that you can both highlight some of the issues, and I think there are a lot of issues that need to be exposed a bit more, perhaps, especially with the academic side of things, but also try and build something positive in dialogue with some of the sort of the leading woman commentators out there that comes up with perhaps a new way forward, maybe a new way of looking at things, something that's positive and constructive, in addition to drawing a line under some of the excesses of the old stuff. And I guess I'm not just saying that because of the, you know, having transitioned, maybe I've got that view. It's more, I think that would be really new and interesting, and there'd be lots of good content that could be created from that, with, you know, people like Camille Paglia, Heather McDonald, Janice Fiamenko, people like that. And I guess there's probably others on the left that would be equally of goodwill and good intent that could really create something quite new. And, you know, I think, yeah, maybe that more than another 12 rules, but I'm sure, you know, because I think there's a risk that it becomes, as you say, a one-trick pony. It's like, here's my second set of 12 rules and now here's my third set. And, you know, that might be, or would you say another biblical series? And it sounded like he was talking with N.T. Wright, I think, or is he at Cambridge, going to be there for a couple of months, getting into the scriptures? I had that feeling, but I might be wrong.
He said he'd be at Cambridge talking to scholars about the Bible, but talking to scholars is kind of like saying talking to college professors. The breadth of people studying the Bible along how many axes is so broad. So it's I don't know. So one of the things that we got at one of our meetups is someone printed out based on the on his question and answer, his next 12 rules. And at our meetup, we said it should be, you know, he should 12 rules for life. His next book should be 12 rules for death. That could be interesting. Because if you have 12 more rules for life, then it's like 24 rules for life. But it's like, well, then 24, 36, 48, it's, you kind of get lost with those lists. So,
yeah, it becomes almost a bit too, not dogmatic, but there's almost too many rules. And maybe that was one of them, like, don't have more rules than you absolutely need to. to be fair, I think there'll be a lot of good stuff in there. I think he would be able to develop something.
Yeah, the next 12 rules, you know, they're not bad, but so you got the chaos order thing. Well, you know, you don't do enough new stuff and the order gets boring. And so,
yeah.
Or you just keep you just always do the same chaos. Well, then that gets boring. So it's hard to, he's in a difficult spot, especially because, so the book tour has gone on and on and on and on, and that's supposed to end. When he started this, I talked to somebody who was in publishing, and he said, yeah, about 18 months is about what you can do a book tour for. And that's what he's planning on. But his book tour isn't really a book tour either. It's something else. And
yeah,
but who knows? Who knows?
Because I think another book and then another book tour would be probably just pushing it, even from my perspective anyway, maybe a little bit too much. But
yeah,
something new, like a new biblical series or further development in that, or again, going off on a completely new tangent, I think would certainly, I don't know, I think it would have more merit, but I'm not advising him, so he will go where he goes, I guess. And I'm grateful for what I've got out of him, definitely. I think had it both, I guess, confirmed a way things should be or a way you can position yourself in the world, but also attended to a few things. And I guess in things like the shadow side, like that's been quite a little bit of an education, actually just facing up to a little bit of that. That's, again, something was always there, but it finally had a name to it and to actually look at it and see it for what it is. And that's quite, I do have a shadow side, I have discovered.
And I think part of what's been interesting, part of what the gift of Peterson has been is that he's left a lot in his wake. I mean, certainly I'm there, but you look at Rebel Wisdom and Jonathan Peugeot and the meetups that we've done, and those meetups have happened in different places. So, in many ways, the content, we came for the scandal, stayed for the content, and what's followed has been a movement of men and women all over learning philosophy and learning psychology and cleaning up their rooms. And so really, in my opinion, that what's come behind him is at least as interesting as he is. And to advise him on what to do next is always a little stupid, in my opinion, because none of us had the idea of doing what he did, and it kind of happened to him anyway. And so who are we to know to tell him what to do next? It just doesn't, he's been right more than, nobody else, everybody else who doesn't have the status that he's gotten. So he's going to do what he's going to do, and we'll all watch, and we'll continue to watch The Truman Show and see where it goes.
And I think it's important to separate from having, someone that's sort of seen as a leader or to be too invested in him, I guess, having seen Owen Benjamin, I think, when the Kavanaugh thing, I think you can get too invested. So being able to step back and go, yeah, this book's been really helpful. These lecture series have been helpful. What you're doing at the moment isn't, but I'm finding this person over here as maybe Jonathan Peugeot, maybe someone else, maybe Paul Van der Klee, or whatever it is. Like you, I don't know, maybe that turns us into the consuming zombies you mentioned, which is a risk, I guess, but I think the benefits of it, I guess it's consumption of something that's positive and good rather than just, say, mindless entertainment or, the white noise of most of what's out there, I guess.
No, I think so, and he's... I was listening to him and Verveke, and again, I've been listening to Verveke more lately and appreciating a lot of Verveke stuff. So it was fun listening to them. But Peter, there's so many layers to a human being. And so that conversation with Verveke, Peterson's just Peterson. And he's talking too much and he's stepping over him and he's, talking too long, and Verveke's being patient with him. But Peterson's just Peterson, and that's what we love about him. He just is who himself, and it's been fun. But yeah, the Owen Benjamin thing just got, at some point you want to sit Owen Benjamin down and say, Owen, take a deep breath. Get a grip of yourself. The world is big. People will disappoint you. Doesn't mean they're monsters or animals. It just means, just relax a little. And no, Owen has gone off in this direction, and it's like, that's...
I haven't been following it much, but I saw the start of it. But I suppose something you mentioned, I think in one of the more recent ones, that, you know, the polarization thing, maybe there is a risk it becomes sort of like the us and them. I think that's a risk. And I suppose if it's depending on how it ends, in the sense that if it was to end with like a hit job, one hit job too many in the papers, I think there'd be something in me that would be, it would be pretty upset, because it would be a sense that something underhand and wrong had triumphed, as opposed to, say, someone making a misstep and taking themselves out because, and maybe that thing with I think Tofa was talking about, I mean, that to me, and again, not knowing the full story, but like Covington, I guess, there's a sense of, you know, it seems to sound a bit strange, but that could, you know, that's a bit, has the look of like a potential misstep, or at least miscommunication.
Yep.
And I guess that's a mistake that someone can make.
Yep.
And you can get rightly taken to task for it, as opposed to being, you know, maliciously misinterpreted and misconstrued to the point where that becomes the only message. There's a real difference. And I think one is what it is, and the other one is something that, there's a sense of something that's quite fundamentally wrong. Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't want to see it end that way.
No.
I guess that would be my thought. That would almost signify something quite serious and not well with the world if hit pieces were able to
take
someone out.
So I went to his, you know, as I reported on his book tour in San Jose. So that's in a sense the second official book tour thing I've been to. I've been to a pre one that was in San Francisco before that. You know, he's talking about what he eats in terms of beef, salt, water, and not salt water, but beef with a little bit of salt on it and water. And part of me looks at him and thinks, I hope, you know, And looking at his schedule, and I think, gosh, that schedule is demanding. And I hope too that it's not a health thing. It really is a fascinating. I am, you know, and then I have to take a step back and say, why am I so fascinated by this? But I've been doing videos about this dude for over a year now, and I'm not tired of it, and other people aren't tired of it, but it's also not ever just been Peterson. And so, for example, at our local meetups, our conversations range all over the map. Peterson is kind of like the catalyzer that brought us together and gets things going, but then we will talk about whatever it is that interests us. So in that sense, too, It's not just him or what he's said or done. He's become an opportunity for a lot of good other things. And so again, to me, it's like, this is just a gift from God to us. And I say, thank you. And that's how I approach it.
However it ends up.
That's right. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. That's the way the world is. So while it's here, I'll say thank you. And we'll keep doing it. But you know, a lot of people, you know, in the media, we forget that a lot of people rise and start because of certain incidences, and then they continue to go on and do things. So who knows where this will go? 2 years from now, you know, maybe we'll look back on this conversation and say, how could we have known?
Yeah. If there was one person I'd really want to sit down and talk to, actually, it would be Tammy. I'd be really intrigued to have a chat with her, and because I'm sure she's probably a pretty hard case, actually, which, you know, in Australian terms is like that makes you a good person automatically if you've got a bit of character and a bit of personality to you. I think, yeah, she would be a fascinating person to talk to.
I agree. If she ever emails me and says, Paul, let's me and you have a conversation. I'm moving stuff, and you know, I'll forget all the equality stuff. I'm going to move my schedule. Say, okay, Tammy, because I'd love to hear your take on all this craziness.
You need about 6 hours, I reckon.
Probably would. But no, I agree with you 100%. I have no idea who she is or how she is, but what he said about her, and, you know, because I watch her, I watch him, and I'm used to watching people, and my sense is, yeah, this is a guy that, in some ways, even though he's hard as a rock in some ways, in other ways he could be a little fragile, can be a little testy, can be irritable, can get grumpy, because he's talked about that himself, and you see it sometimes in his videos. Oh. And he keeps saying she's his stability, and I completely believe it. She's probably, now Jordan, you kind of, you know, she probably fine-tunes him regularly, and he takes it, which is an amazing thing.
Yes, yeah. And it's probably all the better for it, I would think she would be, yeah. I have heard her speak, I think. She introduced him fairly early on, I think, at a speech he gave somewhere. And she talked, I think, for about 5 minutes at the start of it. It sort of been probably within the first 2 or 3 months, I think. I might be wrong, of the Bill C-16.
Oh.
Yeah, it was interesting. She just a little brief snippet about... introducing him, I guess, but you learned a little bit about her as well.
Yeah,
she would be very fascinating to talk to, I think.
Yeah, no, she'd be. So Tammy, if you're listening,
this is an open invite from me.
That's right. I'm here to talk. The mic will be yours. You can say whatever you want. I'll post it on my little 10,000 sub channel. I think she could get much bigger platforms than mine.
I'm sure she'd take the opportunity. One, I suppose, segueing on from that, you know, how the Jordan Peterson thing ends, I suppose, how would you see Christianity progressing? Because I listen fairly gobsmacked, to the Greta Vosper things you were talking about with the church. And when you played that clip of the people singing the song to science, I think that's where I fell off my chair. I was like, really? Why would you do that? It's just, I just don't understand. So there's part of me that almost sort of sees a split, and I'm probably reading this completely wrong, where you've got... kind of reminds you of like vegan bacon or something along the line. Like we don't want church. We absolutely hate this thing, but let's create something that looks almost identical and just call it, I don't know, the mind. The mind boggles, it really does. But, and again, maybe using the LGBT thing as a bit of a marker, you can almost split, or I feel like you can split between churches that are, so really accepting of that, and but potentially maybe progressive, I guess, accepting of a lot of things, but almost seem to sort of go too far in one direction where it's like, you know, we're just like the culture, at which point you become increasingly irrelevant because, well, if we've got the culture, what do we need the church for? Like, there's no point of difference.
That's right.
And then you swing to the other side where it's still very traditional and dogmatic, but isn't perhaps open to things like, say, gay and lesbian marriage. I don't know. There doesn't seem to be an I don't have that big picture monarchical vision, I guess. I kind of see snippets here and snippets there. But, yeah, I don't know. Is there a middle ground? Or is it, it's either heading towards complete irrelevancy because it just is exactly the same as everywhere on the outside, or isn't open to moving with the tides? I don't know if that's the best way of putting it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there a middle ground?
So before I ever found Jordan Peterson, I was reading Rod Dreher's blog for a while, and I was really wrestling with, well, the Christian Reformed Church, along with, you know, just about many, like many other denominations, the Christian Reformed Church wrestling with same-sex marriage, LGBT issues, and trying to sort that out. Now, when I say sort that out, I mean a lot more than just figuring out how I feel about it or figuring out what I think the church should do about it or not do about it. Because here's the question. The church has to deal with change, and the church can't lose the thread. And that's been a dynamic in the narrative thread. And that's been a dynamic in church history all the way from the start. And it's a good thing. You know, we probably wouldn't have had the New Testament if it hadn't been for the Gentile question. And, you know, can and the circumcision question. Because the circumcision question is a pretty binary question. Either you're circumcised or not. There's no halfway in that.
No little grab there.
That's right. So that is a really, there are no texts in the Old Testament that would suggest that this covenant of circumcision would be laid aside. And so the initial fight between, as Paul calls them, the Judaizers and, you know, or the circumcision group and those like Paul that were baptizing uncircumcised Gentiles, that is a pretty major fight. And it leads obviously to the Council of Jerusalem in the book of Acts. And so, and right there you have this, in Christianity, at the beginning, you have this paradigmatic moment where how is Christianity going to deal with the narrative thread and change of circumstance? You had that in Peter visiting Cornelius, and Peter seeing the gift of the Holy Spirit given to Cornelius, and so on and so forth. So when it comes to the church and dealing with this same-sex marriage question, these LGBT questions, you have a situation like that where the church can't ignore this, but it's going to have to work through it, and it's probably going to need a few hundred years.
Yes, yeah. It's not, something that's it. Yeah.
And we, in our culture right now, we don't now know how to manage a decision-making matrix or a decision-making politic or institutional framework that works at that speed.
No, we're far more instantaneous.
Right.
There's or it isn't, you can change something now. Yeah, and I should say at this point, you can say anything on the topic. I'm not going to be the least bit offended or try and trip you up or anything. I probably should have said that at the very start, that this is not something that, you know, open dialogue is, I guess if I learned anything from Jordan Peterson, is that, to be able to say what one thinks without fear of recrimination or, you know, if you know what I mean. So that, I'll put that out now. So,
well, thank you. And I'll be honest with you. I mean, YouTube is a place with nothing left to lose for people with little to lose. And so, whereas there are things I could lose by saying the wrong thing on this subject for me. And I have to be a little sensitive to that because unlike Jordan Peterson, I guess, is technically still a professor at the University of Toronto. I am under the oaths that I've given to my God via the Christian Reformed Church. So that, you know, that is a part of what I have to do with this. But what I said is for me the best, when people ask me about this question, it's a question you get as a pastor fairly often. That's always how I frame it, because people say, well, surely this or surely that. And I usually say, well, I don't know, and I'm okay not knowing, and I'll probably not know my whole life long. Now, when you ask me for particular actions or votes at a synod or decisions or takes, my take is this is very early for a decision like this. And when I watch people, let's say, in the mainline church, just simply declare, oh, obviously, I say, no, not obviously. This is something that there's a lot to wrestle with, and I don't think one particular generation can actually do this work. I think there'll be many generations. So when you ask the question, is there middle ground? See, this is where, in a sense, the different speeds of different traditions within Christianity begin to manifest their wisdom and their liability. So the fractiousness of Protestantism means that, well, that's what it is, means that all these little different denominations are going to be experimenting and trying these different things. And the phrase that is just barely a year old, the meme that is barely a year old, you know, get woke, get broke. Well, this has been true of a lot of mainline denominations for a while now, you know, a little while, because that's all it's been. But, you know, you look at mainline denominations that, just as you said, they're ready to embrace whatever the culture is feeding them. And at some point people say, why do I need the church when I have the church of the culture? So it's the conservative churches that, in a sense, get the institutional wins by resisting the culture. So then people that I know who are, you know, who want to practice traditional Christianity but are also pursuing an affirming lifestyle or something like this, well, then they're kind of stuck in a mainline church. And then they complain about some of the other aspects of mainline. And it's like, well, I'd like to have a church that's a little bit more like this. And okay.
The church of me, essentially.
Exactly. That's where we go. It's the church of me. So the Protestants are playing that game. The Roman Catholics, obviously, they've got a bunch of other games going, partly because of the child abuse scandals and all of the stuff that's been going on in there. We don't know much about the Orthodox. They've been, you know, the Orthodox have been hidden in the Middle East and in the Eastern Bloc for all of these years. And so those of us in the West are just kind of starting to get our heads around, you know, the new Orthodox that are coming out. So in my opinion, this is all just very early days in this whole discussion. And it could be that 20 years from now, we won't even be talking about this one way or the other. We don't know. It could be that we'll continue to ruminate on it. But this is the kind of thing that it takes the church centuries to work through, not years or decades. And that's how I approach it. And it makes some people grumpy because I don't come down dogmatically on one side or another. They say, you're a fence sitter. I said, no, I'm not a fence sitter. The Christian Reformed Church is not an affirming denomination. I'm comfortable with that. Those who want to push it. See, part of how I got into this whole Jordan Peterson and thing was, before that, I was thinking about what today I would call woke religion, before I was calling progressive liberationism, and saying, you've kind of embraced a different religion and it's different from Christianity. I think it's a version of Christianity. I think it's a version of Christianity that breaks the narrative thread. So these are people even within the Christian Reformed Church who are working in this. And so I would say, even though I've always been on the left of the Christian Reformed Church, so I've been on the left of a very conservative denomination, but, you know, and so these are the kinds of conversations I've been having. So then when Jordan Peterson arises, it's like, hey, there's some stuff I can learn in there that will help me in my project for figuring out what's going on religiously in our culture. Because, you know, now I've been trying to get out some more videos on the hoax paper guys and this, because that's very interesting for me, because that's very much the stuff I was working on.
That new religion that Peter Boghossian was talking about, that it is. And yeah, I think that's a pretty good analysis. There's very comparable aspects to it, the idea of original you know, the original sin, the, you know, that, yeah, that's, and yeah, you can see churches going in that direction. And the sense I have is that they're not the ones surviving, or at least they're finding it hard, because after a while, like, what, why do we need to meet, you know, one hour a week when there's nothing different to the outside anyway?
Yeah.
And I mean, I was born and raised Roman Catholic, so, you know, I guess I find myself in a very strange spot where I have a lot of affinity, I guess, for the tradition, the traditions, the, I don't know, I guess the sense of awe in the buildings, the there's something, or the sacraments, there's something, having, I guess, that structure, I find, I guess, and I'm probably having looked at the understand yourself thing, you know, I do tend towards that more conservative side, despite having, I guess, enough openness to be creative. I mean, when you think about the scientific illustration, it's still the most anally retentive side of art that you could possibly have. So that conservative side still comes through. Even if the, you know, the whole sexual abuse scandal, I think, shaken certainly my faith in the institution, there's still something about that tradition and that continuity, I suppose. That's, I don't know if reassuring is the right word, but it is very, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure how we'll describe it, but there's this, a sense of being at home within that, I guess. But knowing that an organisation that large takes a long time to move in any direction, like a large ocean liner. And I don't even know if I necessarily want them to change, which is a weird, even though someday, you know, I do have a partner and we have talked about getting married. Yeah, I don't know if I'm all that fussed if they were to say we still don't agree or accept it. As long as they don't beat you out of the door, I guess that's something at least. I don't know. Yeah, it's a weird one. And you can understand people looking at it and going, this is something that's so obvious it should be an easy change. But you can also understand that sort of that, and I guess being in the middle, you can see both perspectives. But yeah, maybe most people probably tend to come down hard on one or the other. It's, yeah.
Well, recently in the United States, so Mike Pence, his wife, before he became vice president, she was teaching in a conservative Christian school that is not affirming of a bunch of the LGBT changes. And so she, again, took a position in that school. And, you know, the Washington Post, you know, hit that hard. And it became, for a moment, because Trump dominates all the rest of the headlines here perpetually, it doesn't leave any air in the room. But, you know, for a moment, that then was, you know, how can the wife of the president of the vice president of the United States hold a position in such a bigoted school? And you want to pause and say, let me remind you that in the 2008 election, Barack Obama was against same-sex marriage, and Hillary Clinton was against same-sex marriage until 2013. That's only 5-6 years ago. Now you're demanding that all of these institutions just change overnight. And so then I was listening to David Brooks. I usually listen to David Brooks every Friday. And while David Brooks then first said all of the kinds of things that someone now in the media would have to say, well, I myself would never work for such an organization, but, and then he at least had the awareness to say, you have to understand that these institutions, these religious institutions and organizations and communities work on very different, my language would be very different clock speeds. And if we're going to have the kind of society that gets very tyrannical very quickly on certain sacrosanct issues, that society is going to become unhinged. And that society is going to have difficulty maintaining its own equilibrium over the long haul, too. It's just a failure to understand how communities, how pluralistic communities work. So this, and your comment about, you know, there was a man who worshipped in this church for many years. He was a founding member who, by all external appearances today, he would very much be assumed to be a gay man. Was, you know, when I came here to the church, he would only come when his mother was in town, and his biggest beef with the church was that the church had changed since what it looked like in the 1950s when he grew up. That's really what he wanted. And so here on one hand, to me, this is just knowing so many people of so many different backgrounds to just imagine, well, here's this one slice of your life, which is your, let's say, your sexual orientation or even expression, that now this tiny slice of your life has to dominate and colonize everything else in your life. And when I see that in a human being, I say, there's something disordered about that. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, people are complex. If you don't understand that people are complex and have tensions within themselves, you don't know people. So let's allow people to be that complex. And when we stop allowing them to do that, people get hurt. And in many cases, needlessly. And so that's what really bothers me. So, and again, in that sense, I am sort of like Jordan Peterson in that I'm an individualist, but I'm also an Imago Dei Christian that says, every person that I come across at one layer or another, I need to offer them the respect of being an image bearer of our God. And therefore, despite all kinds of things in their life that I might consider problematic, I first must regard them as an image bearer. And I think that, as Peterson, I think, is correct on, that's one of the foundational elements of our society. And if we lose that, we're a very short step away from a lot of bad things.
Yeah. I found that's been one really good way of trying to sort of integrate the shadow side, I guess, is seeing people as that image bearer of God, no matter how much I might disagree with them. And that then should regulate how I interact and how I think, and more how I brood, I suppose, is probably one of the best ways of thinking about it. I had a train of thought and suddenly got off the track. It only happens about 4 or 5 times a day. The first question I think I wanted to ask on behalf of the rest of the world is how a nation of, what, 60 million, 60 million people in America?
In the United States, 350 million people.
350 million. I think myself and the rest of the world would love to know. It's like, how did Trump and Clinton rise to the top of, like, 300 million of you? Surely there must be, like, someone better. I shouldn't laugh. In Australia, they change politicians like they change their underwear. It's like they've gone through... There's been, like, the last one just got rolled in a leadership coup about, I don't know, 5 or 6 months ago. The previous party that was in power, they chopped and changed, so they kept stabbing each other in the back. And then I think at the end of last year, half of them were ruled ineligible because all had dual citizenships with other countries they didn't realise by virtue of marriage or descent or something or other. So half of them, well, a fair few had to leave parliament because they were no longer here. Eligible to be there until they renounce their citizenship. But even with that, still the question remains about America. It's like, really? Those two? I think I was listening to, I think it was Neil Ferguson, I think. This must have been before the election, I think, described it as a selection between a snafu and a foobar. Being from the military background, I can completely understand that, and I think that's a pretty good summation of the two leading contenders. So, well, we wait with interest.
Well, 2020 is going to be a very interesting election all over again. Instead of seeing, you know, 12 Republicans fighting it out and having Donald Trump rise to the top, you know, we're going to have a whole bunch of Democrats fighting it out and have who knows who rise to the top, maybe to, you know, maybe to compete with Trump. Maybe there will be a, maybe Trump won't even be in office come 2020. Maybe there will be a Republican challenger. It's crazy. But then again, you know, if you look at world history, history is crazy. And,
yeah,
you know, look at the rise of how many different leaders. I think in many ways in the 20th century, the United States was graced to have so often from both political parties some quite good leaders. But then again, also, look at someone like JFK, John F. Kennedy, very smart guy, you know, probably a sex addict, but in a different age. So, you know, I think it's a testament to the American political system that, you know, it's deeply disturbing right now for a lot of people in the United States, and a lot of people did not like either of our choices, but who knows? This is why, you know, this is
why I'm a Christian. You know, the whole process, and I never thought, Trump would be elected. I really just didn't see that happening.
And I didn't either.
I think most of us now spend the next year waiting for the world to end with a big bang. But probably, I suppose, out of that whole thing, I think the thing that intrigued me, maybe disturbed me the most, was the way the evangelical church seemed to get into bed with Donald Trump so quickly. I really felt, I thought they really sold their souls on that one. And it's funny because I know Sam Harris rails against Donald Trump quite a lot, but I've always seen Donald Trump as kind of like the ultimate, if you follow down Sam Harris's atheism, someone, there's no tomorrow, you know, there's no life after death, it's only this world, grab what you can get, literally, by whatever you can do. I mean, that should be Sam Harris's God, should it not? It's like this guy is living everything, I think, that atheism, unless you have to come up with like an altruistic atheism that, yes, it's only this life, so, but we should all kind of be good and kind to each other. Whereas, I don't know, you kind of think if it's only this life, then basically grab what you can, it's everyone for themselves, and you know, the devil take the hindmost.
I think part of the difficulty of watching politics in the United States is the filter we're seeing it through. Even the term evangelical sort of masks a rather broad and diverse community of churches. I think many who would consider themselves evangelical in America would have preferred a different Republican than Donald Trump. Yet there was no way most of them were going to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump's the way he got elected was in many ways so unusual in that it was just a very unusual year. Part of the difficulty is that the stuff is so here's the thing. The population of, I've been looking at Australia a little bit more. The population of Australia, I believe, is less than the population of California. The population of Canada is less than the population of California. The United States is an enormous, populous, diverse nation, and politics gets rammed into a binary choice, the presidential election, every 4 years, that there's so much built into that, that snap judgments based on it of different groups of people should be held pretty loosely. Now, Jerry Falwell Jr. and Liberty University, That group has a whole different history. And go back to Jerry Falwell Sr. and the rise of the religious right. And I mean, these are the evangelical is not a church. Evangelical is, in my opinion, kind of a marketplace. And there are ideas in that marketplace. There are economics in that marketplace. There's culture in that marketplace. But it is a very large, complex situation. So many of the people, when I think of the people in my own congregation who voted for Trump, probably to a person, all of those people would much rather have voted for someone else, but they were not going to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And part of that has to do with abortion, which in the United States has been a very big social issue and a very big issue in the church, which is also enormously complex. So
I had a feeling that was one of the driving things behind there. It almost came down to that single issue.
Yeah. And Trump is not an idiot. He, you know, for as much as I get frustrated with him, but he is not an idiot. And he's a salesman and he understands how to get what he wants. I think in many ways, the left in the United States does themselves a disservice by making, by characterizing him and stereotyping him in certain ways. He's more complex than that. So, and whereas the places of his politics that I disagree, which are, I didn't vote for him. I voted for a third party candidate this election. Over the last number of years, I voted for a fair number of third party candidates because I was raised much more in alignment with the Democratic Party, but I've been so frustrated by them in the last number of elections, I often won't give them my vote, and I'm frustrated by Republicans. But many Americans are like that. And in a two-party system, every election, you kind of give it your best shot, depending on lots of variables.
Yeah, Australia and New Zealand, you know, the split is, it's close to 50-50. Like in New Zealand, we get by, the minor parties almost hold the balance of power because no major party can ever win on their own, and I don't think have won. Well, maybe a few years ago they did without needing to form coalitions, but yeah, it is a real 50-50 split by and large.
Australia, 24.6 million people.
Yeah.
That's Texas, you know? if we had a parliamentary system in the United States, obviously there'd be multiple parties and then you have a dynamic like that. But in a two-party system, in a country that's so huge and so diverse, but at the same time, I mean, the American political system is a very conservative one. It's hard to get anything done. And there's some wisdom in that, which I think has in some ways served the country well. So,
watch this space.
I don't know. I'm, you know, here I am. I'm an American. I live with it.
Yes, I do feel for you.
The United States population, 325 million, not 350. 325 million. Canada, 36 million. That's about the size of California. UK, 66 million. So,
whereas in New Zealand, we've got a population of 60 million sheep, of which 5 million think they're human.
So, yeah, politics. I try not to talk too much politics on my channel just because there's so much Trump derangement on both sides that once you mention, I think Christians and just about everybody else has given Donald Trump too much attention, and we'd all be better off talking about him less. That's kind of my take.
Yeah, that's probably a fair call. It's fascinating to watch from the outside, but I'm guessing it's probably not quite so much fun to live with the reality.
Kind of like your neighbor's bad marriage, you know? It's like, he took a mistress. Oh, she threw out his clothes. Yeah.
It's, you know, like a train wreck sometimes. It's horrible to look at, but you just can't turn away.
Hey, but the rest of the world, they have plenty of, you know, look at, you look at the Brexit mess in England. And
what shambles, yeah.
So politics is a dirty business. And I was just telling my mother this morning, I don't want Oprah to run. I want boring politicians. That's what I want. I want politicians who are so dull that they just go to work and do their and keep the and do their jobs. You know, no more celebrities, please.
Yes, yeah. Banish all their Twitter accounts of every politician. I think you'd get far more work done across the board, left and right, I think. So yeah.
But it's a function of our world right now. And so we've got to sort out social media. You know, this is all hard.
Yeah, I found it was interesting, I guess, coming up from the Catholic side of things and being probably a bit more, whatever the conservative trait is in the Big Five, I suppose. After my transition, I found myself becoming more open and more left-leaning. And there was a lot of good things that happened that really challenged, I guess, my perception of treating the other, seeing as how I kind of was the other, even though I had a very good run, and I certainly can't complain. I guess it opened my eyes, I suppose, to how I could do that better. For example, I spent a year or so volunteering at a free food place, and you got to meet people that, yeah, weren't very high on that dominance hierarchy and probably weren't going to. But it really was an eye-opener for me, and it encouraged me to see that in Margot Day and others and interact with them as humans and not be as anywhere near as judgmental as I once would have been. And I'm sure I've got plenty of room for improvement still. I suppose wanting to be more open and more heading that direction, it's been a real eye-opener seeing perhaps the excesses of that left progressive side of things, and then finding myself coming back almost because I see it almost being too much. And maybe you could look at, say, the tyranny of some of the LGBT movement, where it is, I find it hard to reconcile some of the things that happen with, you know, these are my people apparently, but you know, I'm not the idea of, like, I don't know, if I came across a baker that wouldn't bake me and my partner, who's female as well, a wedding cake, I might be a little bit annoyed, but, I don't know that I would be, go to the point of trying to put them out of business. I see we've got a visitor.
Yeah, hang on, Lucy. Hey, Brad, I've got you in 15 minutes. So if you give Lucy and I a couple minutes to wrap up, I'll see you in about 15. How's that sound? So why don't you disconnect now? I'll finish my conversation with Lucy and I'll see you in about 15 minutes. You don't think so? Can you hear me?
I don't think I can hear you, no.
He's got a beautiful place. I don't know if he's in a church or where. It's gorgeous.
It's probably as well you can't see this. I'm in the library in one of the reading rooms, and it's just brick walls, and it's like I'm in a cell.
He's figuring it out.
Yeah.
I forgot to I can lock the room here, and I forget to do that sometimes, and then you get the next person coming in. I think what I'll do is there. It just poor man. Now he's really confused.
Yeah.
I'll see him in 15 minutes and apologize. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Keep talking.
I guess there's that sense of trying to, of heading more, I guess, in a leftwards direction and being more open, but yet suddenly discovering some of the excesses and trying to reconcile that. I don't even know where that would place me in the scheme of things now. It's a funny thing to try and understand. And
well, it's like the evangelical question. So in many ways, I'm an evangelical. I've got a conservative stance on scripture. I've got conservative stances on many things, but in other ways, I don't feel, you know, when someone supposedly stands up and speaks for evangelicals, I think that's not me. So it's part of these weird things that are created in the world that we, you know, okay, well, you've transitioned, so you're part of this group. And it's like, well, wait a minute, you know, don't I get a say in that? Especially because these groups just pop up out of the media. You know, so you got this media that we look at ourselves through, and then here, this is the identity you're assigned. It's like, hey, wait a minute. You know, why should CNN or the New York Times or Fox News tell me who I am? Who are they?
Yeah. I mean, I can totally understand why Jordan Peterson got, you know, a large number of letters, proportionally, yeah, I guess, from people in exactly the same boat, I suspect. Maybe the slightly older ones would have very quickly come down on, you know, the side that, yeah, what the sort of the more activist types are doing is not representative of all of how perhaps we feel or think. It's a strange one. It's interesting times. It really is.
It is. Yeah. You know, a good friend of mine who's a gay man, lives in the Bay Area, married for a number of years, grew up Christian Reformed, loves to talk about it, can't let that go, won't go to a Christian Reformed church because of the stance of the Christian Reformed church on same-sex marriage, you know, sings in church choirs whenever he can get the chance to, loves the old music. I mean, and to me, this is just how we are as human beings.
Yeah.
We are individuals. And our pieces never quite fit together. And we have ideas that are contradictory, yet they live in our brains and we're always working on them. So to me, that's just what people are. And so, especially as we get older, we differentiate.
Yeah. And I think the ability to hold a lot of things in tension rather than needing to have a definite answer is something I've said. Found more and more completely irreconcilable things, you can still hold a balance between, seeing both perspectives perhaps, or not needing to always come down on one side or the other.
Right. And so then people ask me about LGBT questions, and it's like, well, you know, your churches and organizations and institutions are going to have to decide through whatever process they have about what their policies are. That's what institutions have to do. Individuals are going to have to decide, just like every other individual, what are you going to do with your body? What are you going to do with your time? What are you going to do with your mind? And that as a Christian, I say, someday you will stand before your Creator and be called to give an account for what you've done with the time, the energy, the money, the body, everything that He's given to you. You will stand and say, Lord, this is what I did with my life. And He is the judge of it. So that's how the world works. And so that's what we do.
That thought has occurred to me. So far, the best response I've got is shrugging my shoulders and going, stuff it, I tried.
And God, I think, if there's anything from the book of Job, that when we stand before Him, he knows us, He sees us. Any idea that makes God less perfect a judge, less good, less true is a bad idea, because if God isn't the optimum of all of those things, then we have no chance. And so we rest, finally, what I believe Christianity says, that we rest on the goodness of God. And that's on our, his goodness and his mercy, and that's what we bank on.
Yeah.
And so that's what I go with. I got nothing better than that, than the goodness of God.
That's pretty good. Yeah. But I guess we're getting pretty close, so obviously we've got someone else lined up. But yeah, I've been very keen to talk again. Really enjoyed this chat, and the time has just flown by.
Well, this has been wonderful, Lucy, and I sure appreciate you taking the time. I don't know what time it is in Australia, but it can't be very early.
No, it's at the moment it's 11:30 in the morning.
Oh, okay. So I'm still can't figure out the time zones all over the world.
What time is it where you are?
Well, it's about almost 4:30. 4:30, I have the next conversation. So I will. This is recorded. I will send it to you, and then you can let me know what you'd like to do with this, and then we'll figure that out. How's that? Yeah.
That sounds pretty good. That'll be great.
Okay, Lucy. It was a delight to talk to you.
Yeah, lovely to talk to you as well. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.